that we don't go far enough. There isn't one market. There are a million markets, each filled with people who share a worldview. The most successful, fastest-moving examples are those where the marketer used a frame to leverage an existing worldview, not to change one. Your opportunity lies in finding a neglected worldview, framing your story in a way that this audience will focus on, and going from there. What color are your glasses? We are not all the same. The mass market is dead. Instead, we are faced with collections of individuals. We may all be created equal, but our worldviews are different. Long before a person is exposed to a particular marketing message, she's already begun to tell herself a story. A Republican's first look at a Democratic presidential candidate is very different than a Democrat's. Silicon Valley venture capitalists looked at eBay with expectations that were completely different than those of a similar firm in Hartford. As the number of choices in every marketplace increases, the power of the consumer to indulge her worldview increases just as quickly. To go to market without understanding your audience's various worldviews is like trying to pick a lock without bothering to notice whether it uses a key or a combination. A worldview is not who you are. It's what you believe. It's your biases. A worldview is not forever. It's what the consumer believes right now. Marketing succeeds when it taps into an audience of people who share a worldview that makes the audience inclined to believe the story the marketer tells. Marketing success stories, Starbucks, Fast Company, the Porsche Cayenne, occur when that shared worldview is discovered for the first time. Who we are affects what we see. The story a consumer tells himself about a new product or service is primarily influenced by the worldview that consumer had before he even knew about the new thing. That worldview affects three things. One, attention. The consumer's worldview determines whether she even bothers to pay attention. If she doesn't think she needs a new brand of aspirin or a faster computer, she's far less likely to notice a new one when it appears. Two, bias. Everyone carries around a list of grudges and wishes. When a new product or service appears on your horizon, those predispositions instantly color all the information that comes in. And three, vernacular. Consumers care just as much about how something is said as what is said. They care about the choice of media, the tone of voice, the words that are used, even the way things smell. When the story that's told to the consumer doesn't match the vernacular the consumer expects, weird things happen. Understanding how worldview interferes with or amplifies the story a marketer tells is the most overlooked element of marketing success. Until now, it's been intuitive. Marketers need to figure out how to get it right every time. Glimpses of a worldview. Do you agree with these statements? New technology can improve my life. If I was prettier, I'd be more popular. If it's a prescription medicine, it's probably safe. I can afford the best. All car salesmen are scum. I need some new clothes. I like opera. It's possible that a product advertised on an infomercial might be a good buy. My goal is to tread lightly on the earth. I love the New York Yankees. Physical therapy will cure me faster than surgery will. Protecting my family from harm is the most important thing I can do. Let's party. Don't tell me shallow stories about consumerism and flash and spend, spend, spend. Talk to me about inner values, quality, and life. That's the end of my list. Regardless of reality, as determined by double-blind studies, extensive research, or a cold, hard look at the facts, the statements above are easily believed or disbelieved by different individuals. Add them and 1,000 others all up, and you've defined the biases that a particular consumer brings to the table. That seems obvious, doesn't it? It does to me. It seems really clear that everyone is different, and those differences explain what we pay attention to and what we ignore. Get just about every marketer, job seeker, nonprofit, political candidate, beer manufacturer, and on and on and on, treats every consumer as a potential customer. Not just a potential customer, but a potential customer who's just like all the other potential customers out there. Of course, all customers are not the same, but they're not all different either. People clump together into common worldviews, and your job is to find a previously undiscovered clump and frame a story for those people. 1,000 worldviews. There are new mothers who believe that happiness lies in the next new educational product for their infant. And there are bodybuilders who believe that the next nutritional supplement will provide them the shortcut to a perfect body. There are environmentalists who are certain that the next scientific innovation will be mankind's last. And xenophobes who know for sure that black helicopters from the United Nations are due to arrive tomorrow. Each of these groups wants to hear stories that support its worldview. Each group, and they're not mutually exclusive, some of these new moms are also conspiracy theorists, sees itself as near the center, not on the fringe, and each group very much wants to be catered to. Baby Einstein, a division of Disney, sold more than $150 million worth of videos for newborns and infants last year, providing a virtually useless product to women who wanted to hear a story that matched their worldview. They bought the story, believed the lie, and shared the story with anyone else who would listen to their word of mouth about teaching infants with videotapes. The people who buy the Baby Einstein videos are complicit in the storytelling that the company does. Soon, the product leaves the obsessed group and becomes part of our culture. You don't have to be part of the original fan group to want to buy the video for your baby now. You do it because your neighbors expect you to. And that means the video isn't useless. Sure, it's useless for babies, but it satisfies a real desire for parents. Aren't these just niche markets? After all, hot sauce addicts and NASCAR fans and chowhounds are nothing but established, if small, markets. It turns out that worldview thinking offers you a much bigger opportunity, the ability to find overlooked big markets by clumping together people with complementary worldviews. Often, a shared worldview is not an entire market, just part of one, and treating each subset of a market with respect to its worldview is essential if you want to be successful in framing and telling a story. Here's an example. When premium tea came to the United States, there are